another episode of the You Down with OVP podcast. I'm Mick, and I'm joined by a man who, since the last time we recorded, has a new beautiful baby boy, has moved into a new house. James, tell us, how's it going, man?
It's going great for all the reasons you just mentioned. Doing fantastic. Yeah, me and the missus have number two and second boy in the family, baby Sam, who's fit as a fiddle and doing well, although keeping us awake. And a new house that we're kind of moving into slowly. There's some work we need to do on it. But more importantly, for the present moment, I'm doing great because we're finally doing a podcast. It's been so long because of how busy both of us have been, but I'm fired up to do it. I'm excited to talk shop. And, I was kind of thinking these big breaks in between, we need to fix them. But at the same time, it almost makes it it's like when you have like the, Conan goes to a half hour format instead of an hour every night, or, John Oliver's pretty popular with just one night a week. I think that's what Conan's going to be doing. So hopefully we bring more tight, better content if we have these big breaks. So I'm excited to do that. Anyways, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Do have to go back to work this week. Only teachers complain about getting the whole summer off and then having to go back to work. But that's the situation I'm in. So adjusting back to that work life. Otherwise, pretty pumped. Baseball is in full swing and soccer season starts tomorrow, the Premier League. So feeling pretty good.
Excellent. What are you drinking tonight?
I'm going with a classic, Mind Haze Firestone IPA. How about you?
I have a Frost Beer Works IPA. They are an outfit in Hinesburg, Vermont, it looks like, looking at the can. It's on the way to the playground that I take the elder son to. So every once in a while, I'll stop in and grab a 4-pack of them. They've surprised me. They're pretty tasty. So enjoying that. And why don't we get right into it, Mick? Why don't you tell the folks what we're going to be talking about tonight?
Absolutely. So we're about 2 weeks on from the trade deadline. I wrote a few articles about trade deadline winners and losers, risers and fallers, if you will. Later, we're going to talk about category standouts because it's that time of the year where you have to look at your standings, figure out where you're short, where you need a boost, and pick up guys who will help you in those categories. So we'll give you some names and hopefully help out all you down with OBP faithful in that respect. So let's get into trade deadline winners first. In my article, I mentioned Trevor Story and CJ Cron staying in Colorado, even though in real baseball, they probably wanted to get traded. Adam Frazier going to the Padres, Eduardo Escobar going to the Brewers, Cesar Hernandez going to the awesome White Sox lineup, Abraham Toro going to Seattle, and Patrick Wisdom benefiting from the Cubs trading away pretty much their whole infield. Those are just a few names I mentioned in the article. James, is there a trade deadline winner that you want to start with?
Yeah, there's a couple people I wanted to start with. I will start with the first couple names you mentioned, or specifically one name, which is CJ Cron. So obviously, CJ Cron being a winner in the sense for fantasy. And I don't think there's any winners in real life when it comes to how Colorado handled the trade deadline. But just looking at him, he's a guy I know you've been touting for a long time. And maybe it's just that I didn't have the best idea of CJ Cron, or I would just think that people would be more pleased with what they're seeing from CJ Cron. Like, I don't know exactly what the expectations were. I granted that they were higher, apparently. But when I look at CJ Cron, the number one thing that stands out to me is that he's pretty well-rounded when it comes to his, roto tools. He's not killing you at batting average, and he's helping you with runs, home runs, and RBIs. So I guess stolen bases isn't there. But, I guess maybe people were expecting higher home run numbers and maybe not as well-rounded of a batter. But wouldn't you say, and I know you've been touting him, but what was the CJ Cron do you think people were looking for versus this one we're seeing? And do you think that maybe that difference of what they were looking for is why they're overlooking him now as far as just a valid person to scoop up off the waiver wire?
Yeah, he was in the 30% for like the whole year. I was putting him in my articles because he had an OPS, between 800 and 850 for the whole year. He's especially good in deep leagues because when you have more bench spots, you have the freedom to start him when he's in Colorado and bench him when he's on the road. And he does have splits, you know. When he's at home, his OPS is 1.062, and when he's on the road, his OPS is 6.29. So when you have that deeper league, you can take advantage of when he's at Coors Field. He's got 15 home runs at Coors Field, 3 away. So, yeah, absolutely love him. He is up to 56% now. People are finally realizing, and he's just been unreal in August. I think he has 17 RBIs already in August, and we are only 12 days into August.
He has 60 RBIs on the year, and he has almost 50 runs as well. So, I totally agree. And, you know, the thing is with splits, if I look at somebody and we're talking, we're not exactly talking about, you know, the number one guy on your roster, but someone to pick up, you know, somebody who has almost, you know, 50 runs, he has 60 RBIs, almost 20 home runs already, has been lights out on fire the past month, isn't killing you at batting average. If I just didn't know the splits behind it, I mean, he still has 60. It's not like he has 60 RBIs in the game, you know, in just these one games. I mean, if you played him every day, you get 60 RBIs at him. And in this case, if you have the luxury to not have to play him when he's outside of Coors Field, then you can basically get all those numbers without the bat.
Right.
So if you have the ability to do it, you know, then all those numbers we just cited, in a sense, they're better because he's got a better average and you're not giving up the garbage days. You know, you can put somebody else in who's going to have a better opportunity for you. So it's not a luxury everybody has, but it's something to keep in mind. And I don't think it's necessary. I mean, it's a strike against him if you can't afford to carry that last person. But, you know, I would just say as far as bats are concerned, getting those stats, period, isn't a bad thing. You know, if he's the, you know, one of the worst bats in your lineup, that's not a bad thing. And he's not killing you anywhere except stolen bases.
That's a really good point. You could just ignore the splits and you're still getting those numbers. When I say deeper league, I should emphasize deeper as in roster spots on your team, you know, to have that ability to sort of platoon. Really crazy splits. He has 10 RBI away, 50 at home in the same amount of games. That's really crazy splits.
That's fucked.
But still, if you just want to set it and forget it, not even thinking about it, you're still getting 18 home runs, 60 RBI. So yeah, there are other guys that we talked about in these trade deadline winners. Anybody else come to mind that you want to discuss?
Yeah, so there's two people I want to talk about that you sent over to me, and then one person I want to introduce into the conversation. But I was thinking Cesar Hernandez is somebody that I think is an interesting one to talk about as a trade deadline winner. You mentioned, you know, he's only in about 41% of leagues, so he's still out there in a lot of leagues. And this obviously, you know, we can piggyback into him maybe when we talk about certain category standouts in our next segment, too. One, I would just say, obviously, he's a big win because of where he went, right? He's going to one of those great lineups. I was a little surprised just, you know, because I hadn't been looking at Cesar Hernandez that much. For a guy with as many runs, you know, he's got a little bit of a hole for batting average, but he also walks a lot, which makes up for a little bit of it. So, you know, if it's an OBP or batting average league, that, you know, might impact things a little bit too. But tell me what your thoughts are on Cesar.
Well, he has 20 home runs already, which is a surprise. His career high was 15. So he's already blown by that. So we're talking about a guy who's going to help you in runs because he's batting second for the White Sox. But also, if you're hitting 20 home runs, you're helping us in home runs and you're going to get RBIs because, well, at least you're batting yourself in if you hit a home run. And yeah, his average is somewhere around 238. But this is actually, it's weighed down by 176 average in April. And since then, he's batted 255. Since July 1st, he's batted 278. And he is a 273 career hitter. So even though he's selling out for a little bit more power, and that could, you know, increase strikeouts, things like that, I still think he's more like a 260, 270 hitter the rest of the way.
And do you think that he is going to, I would think so, but just to throw an idea past you here, new team, new manager, new strategy. Do you think he's, you know, going to keep selling out for power, batting two in the White Sox lineup?
That's a good question. You know, maybe Tony La Russa, old school manager, says, hey, you're in the two hole, make contact, get that average up. So maybe we get a little bit best of both worlds in terms of a more rounded, well-rounded player getting on base, which is what he's been for the rest of his career. He's basically a four category contributor when you think about it. And funny enough, the only category he's not contributing anymore is stolen bases, which used to be his calling card. He used to get about 19, 18 per year. He has had zero in 2020 and 2021. So he's kind of flipped as a player, but he's a real useful fantasy player. And like you said, 41% own. So he's really grown on me in these last few weeks.
Yeah, no, he's on my radar, and I got an eye on him too, because like everybody, there's certain holes I need to fill that I think he might be able to. One other name I wanted to bring up that you sent over to me is Abraham Toro. And the reason I wanted to ask you about him is because, you know, other than yourself, I haven't seen too much about him. So I just wanted you to tell me kind of why you love him and why you think he's a winner in the trade deadline.
Yeah, well, you taught me something about Abraham Toro, which is that on CBS, he's Abraham Toro Hernandez. So he's hyphenated. You were asking me about Abraham Toro Hernandez, and I'm like, you're talking about Teoscar Hernandez? But you're apparently right. No, Toro is a guy who got traded for Kendall Graveman. Kendall Graveman went to the Astros. Toro went to the Mariners, and he wasn't doing too great for the Astros. I don't know if there has been a switch in his, you know, approach, but what I do know is that since he's gone to the Mariners, he's had four home runs and he's batting .360 over the last 2 weeks. On the year, he has 9 home runs and 4 stolen bases in limited, you know, about a half season. Hasn't been up for the whole season. And in AAA, before he got the call up, he had a 171 WRC plus. While that is a very hitter friendly league, he was still 71% better than league average in that league. So he was ripping it up. He was the Houston Astros consensus number three prospect. He has a good pedigree, and he's batting fifth for the Mariners on most days. So great source of RBIs. According to Bill James, when you make performance neutral, the cleanup spot is the best spot for RBIs, and the fifth spot is the second best spot for RBIs. So when you think about where RBI is going to come from, while RBI can be somewhat arbitrary stat, the guys who are hitting in the middle of the lineup are definitely going to overall contribute more. So, yeah, I like Toro. You know, it's another guy, Jorge Soler, switched from the Royals to the Braves and has suddenly come alive. Sometimes there's just like a change of scenery can bring the best out of somebody. There's like that intangible thing about it, but it's not just that. You can look at the stats. You can see that he was ripping up AAA, and he becomes very, very interesting to me. And he's 44% owned, so still available in a lot of leagues.
Yeah, and do you think he's going to run a lot? I mean, he's already got all those stolen bases in such a limited amount of time. Do you kind of see that continuing?
It's not his MO to steal bases, so I'm not expecting too much. Like in the minors, his biggest total at any one spot was 5 stolen bases. He's not slow, but it's not really his MO. So, you know, the bad X projections has him for 2 the rest of the year. That seems about right. So you can't really rely on him for steals, but he does have 4, like we said. So maybe he'll get a few more.
He's got 60 speed on Fangraphs. 60
out of 60. Yeah, so he is fast, yeah.
And, you know, I bet you, without looking, I bet you what happened is he probably had, like, one of those days where he stole 2nd and 3rd. You know, maybe, you know, sometimes they kind of just steal 2 bags in one game and it kind of overinflates it if they do that a couple times.
Or a couple in a series because they know that the opposing catcher doesn't really have the arm. Like the Dodgers have been really susceptible to stolen bases this year because of that.
That makes sense. Yeah, still, hey, it's a little bit of an added bonus if you get some out of it. Did I not hit anybody that you really wanted to chat about when it comes to the winners of the trade deadline?
Well, we talked about Cesar Hernandez, Toro, and Jorge Soler kind of getting traded into better situations. We talked about Story and Cron sort of staying in a better situation. Another guy whose situation kind of improved at the deadline, kind of got worse, but regardless, he's been hitting well, is Patrick Wisdom of the Cubs. He has first base and third base eligibility. His not being around Bryant and Rizzo and Baez hurts him because the lineup is worse. But hitting cleanup every day, not having days off because, you know, his positions first base and third base are taken by all-stars helps him. And just on the year, Patrick Wisdom has been very impressive. He's got 18 home runs, 55.6 hard hit percentage, which is seventh in the league. So a really intriguing guy. He does have a really high K rate, but a guy who could definitely help you, you know, getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but home runs and RBIs for sure.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. Good to keep in mind. The only thing I wanted to add is we talked about trade deadline winners, and I don't know how much of a huge difference it makes, but a guy that we've talked about in the past as far as closers is Ian Kennedy. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if going to Philadelphia and playing with a team that's been hot of late, right? What's your guys, you guys have been, you know, yeah. What your like last 10 games has been?
Well, we're still in first place. We had a, I want to say, 8-game winning streak. Did lose 2 in a row to the Dodgers, but won today. Ian Kennedy got the save. It was a 5-out save. He nailed it down. Gave up a few base runners, but ultimately got it done. He's been in a lot of high leverage situations already since he's gotten there, and he hasn't blown one yet. He's given up some runs in situations where he still got the save, but definitely a big improvement for what the Phillies needed. We're in first place. Both of our teams are in the playoff hunt, and it's very exciting for us.
Yeah, yours is in the right direction trending, and mine, unfortunately, is trending in the wrong direction with the Red Sox. Hopefully, Chris Sale, you know, gives us a little bit of a spark that we need. I think he's pitching Saturday. All reports have been that Chris Sale is looking awesome, so that'll be good. The Phils are 8-2 the last 10 games, so you guys have definitely been hot. And I think Ian Kennedy was kind of crumbling a little bit before the trade, so I think he picked it up a little bit since. And he also, you know, he's still getting the save. I don't think he has too much competition. So I think that that's a decent person that most leagues probably have any potential closer scooped up. But, you know, if you see him available or you want to send something cheap to get him, it might not be a bad idea.
I have a question for you about the Red Sox. Sale's obviously been dominating. I think in the minors, he's just been dominating. I think he's had 5 rehab starts, building up from 2 innings to 3 innings, 4 innings. If you were the manager, if you were in Alex Cora's shoes, would you do like he did and have him build up so in his first start he can potentially go 6 innings? Or would you just have Sale come up earlier, even if it means he's pitching 3 innings, but there's 3 shutout innings? Which way would you go with that?
Well, one, I would say hindsight's 20/20, right? So seeing what has happened in the 4, you know, weeks that Sale has been rehabbing or what have you, or pitching, you know, in rehab games, and seeing what our record has been, you know, I would say it couldn't be much worse. And I would say bring him up. I'd say bring him up either way. You know, I don't know much about the health impacts, if they, you know, throw any different or what have you. I wouldn't think they would. But just from the standpoint of like Chris Sale, right, his mentality, he's Chris Sale. He's not like a fragile flower that's going to have to get worried about going out there and, you know, given, you know, I think a lot of times you do it for a psychological thing. It's like a shooter wants to see the basketball go through the hoop. You know, a pitcher might want to see him get some whiffs throwing against a little bit worse competition. And also kind of building up their confidence and their form and, you know, making sure they're healthy. So what I would say is, as far as pitchers I can think of, and maybe a lot of them don't, who knows, you know, I'm not a sports psychologist, but, you know, I think Chris Sale is probably the number one person you would think mentally, you know, mental wise doesn't need any of that. He just wants to get out there and compete at the highest level. So I'd like, you know, in retrospect or hindsight, I'd say definitely would like to see him maybe, you know, obviously get a couple rehab starts, but if he's looking good and healthy, let him pitch an inning or two here and there, especially with the way our bullpen has been blowing up lately. You know, we've been giving up leads left and right, which is very frustrating. So I think I like that approach myself, but maybe I'm a little bit biased just by seeing what's happened.
Right. I would tend to agree. I'm not saying don't give him any rehab starts, but I think it was 5. He had maybe 6. I thought he could have come up a little earlier, even if it means that he was on a pitch count. But on the bright side for the Red Sox, you guys, you're getting Schwarber back as early as Friday, the reports say. Tanner Houck has been absolutely amazing. He's, you know, yo-yoed back and forth between AAA. He has like one of the dirtiest sliders in the game. I think he's replacing Martin Perez. Sale is replacing Garrett Richards. So that's a big upgrade along with Schwarber. So maybe things will look up for you guys.
The Yankees made a lot of moves.
Yeah, they sure did. They got some lefties, including you down with OBP. Love Joey Gallo. I guess we could talk about Joey Gallo a little bit right now. He's clean shaven. He's struggling. But before he came to the Yankees, he was having one of those amazing seasons that, you know, we know he's capable of. I'm not sure if he's reaching right now. But I sort of looked over his stats. I looked at infield flies. I looked at, you know, whiff rate. He is striking out more for sure. He's a guy who strikes out a lot. He was at 32%.
He's still walking a ton though, right?
Yeah. He was at 32% with the Rangers. He's at something like 38% with the Yankees in terms of K rate. So maybe he's reaching a little bit, but looking at everything, it seems like he'll turn it around.
You know, he's Joey Gallo, right? He's not exactly Joe consistency. You know, he gets fire hot and he gets cold spells, and then it averages out to what you normally see, which we both think is going to be a higher batting average than I think a lot of other people think. One encouraging thing is I think he's still been walking a ton, which coming from the Texas lineup to the Yankees lineup, you might think he's not going to get pitched around as much as he was before. But yeah, you know, I think with that left porch, the right field porch, that's just, well, it's like a hop, skip, and a jump away from home plate. You would think that he's going to be putting a lot over that. And I think that the second he gets hot, you're going to see a lot of home runs in right field. What do you think about that porch in right?
He has one home run so far for the Yankees. It had a 48-degree launch angle. It was absurd. It was over 110 miles per hour and a 48-degree launch angle, and it barely cleared that, you know, porch in right field for New York. There's a Twitter account called Would It Dong, and they say how many stadiums this would have been out of. So I searched that one. I'm like, it's only going to be Yankee Stadium. They said it would have been out in 10 stadiums. I don't believe it. I really don't.
Yeah.
I feel like there's some glitch in the Statcast for that one because it was a weird one. But yeah, I'm not too worried. And it's a perfect stadium for him, going from the Ranger Stadium where it kind of lipped out in right field to the inverse at Yankee Stadium. I think he'll be just fine. It just kind of stinks because we're not Yankees fans. And you're a Red Sox fan.
No, it does. I am a Gallo fan. It does suck to see him in pinstripes, you know, but I'd like to see him succeed and his team fail. I remember on a tangent, but there was this epic Red Sox match. And, you know, memory is a funny thing. Maybe I'm going to put a different name to who actually did it or what have you. But it was a Clemens-Pedro game, and they were both pitching like vintage Roger Clemens and Pedro Martinez. So there wasn't a lot of contact all game. And the Red Sox won it on a Trot Nixon home run. That was probably it was the shortest home run you can hit in Major League Baseball. And it was just funny to watch Roger Clemens. It's probably like the ninth inning, you know, to watch Roger Clemens throw pretty much as good as you can get and then lose on a like 300, you know, or whatever it was.
Right.
But
I think that porch is 310, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if they kept the exact same or not with the old and new, but I think they did. So it's a funny little layout there. Did you want to talk about any trade deadline losers, Mick?
Yeah, I also wrote an article about, you know, guys who are trade deadline losers. I made the article trade deadline losers, and then I switched it to fallers because I was like, oh man, what if like Luis Urias is like, he's like, oh man, I'm a loser.
Yeah.
So I switched it to fallers. The guys that I mentioned were John Gray and Herman Marquez of the Rockies. So it's kind of the opposite of Story and Cron staying put. Gray is a unrestricted free agent after this year. Marquez, it's next year. They have to deal with the headache of switching their game plan. Okay, I'm at home. I have to rely on, you know, more fastballs, less movement. Okay, I'm on the road. I can, you know, do my breaking pitches a little more. And I know that they both have better stats at home this year. I just don't think that's consistent, something that you can definitely say hang your hat on for the rest of the year. And I think if they went pretty much anywhere else, they would just be like, okay, now I can relax. And you would see two bona fide I don't know, aces? Is that too extreme? It's not for Germán Márquez, for sure.
I was about to say, I picked up Márquez a little while ago, and he's just been remarkable. He's efficient, and obviously he's playing in the worst place he can play. So I think, yeah, especially him, but I don't think that's an overstatement. You know, it's one of those funny things, I guess, where you can't necessarily... Logic would dictate that that would be the case. Who knows? Maybe for some weird, freaky reason, they're good at playing in certain places, or it's a mental thing or what have you. You know, there's those players like say, Joey Gallo, where you're like, hey, he goes to the Yankee Stadium, he should do this. For some weird reason, they might not, but you would think they would. So I agree with you. Yeah, I think they both, it sucks, you know, that they got stuck there with that organization too, let alone that ballpark that's going to be impossible to pitch in. But, you know, I don't know what that dumpster fire is over there.
Seriously.
And then you mentioned our boy, Duran, who's probably going to get hit with the Schwarber trade. The Schwarber trade, I like it a lot. I didn't realize that he had been mashing as much as he was before he got hurt, which he really, really was. It's just an interesting one because, you know, hey, I'm happy about it. And it gives us another lefty at bat that we need. But it's just kind of a crowded field there for him to get his time. But definitely one of the people who's going to lose playing time because of that is Duran.
Yeah, what you guys really needed was a first baseman. Whether Schwarber can get some reps there and be passable there is, you know, yet to be seen. Rizzo would have made a lot of sense. Really would have made a lot of sense because you needed that lefty. You needed that first baseman. So we'll see. We'll see if Schwarber can do that because that's what you guys are throwing out Franchi Cordero there a lot. And it's just like, yeah,
you can improve on that. I think Schwarber is going to play first.
Okay.
I think he played first. I think he was a Cape League guy. I think he played first in the Cape League. I don't want to misspeak, but I think that's the case. So, yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's a tough one, but I think he can pick it up. We'll see. We'll see what they do. I have high hopes. So we should probably jump into category standouts. And the categories we're looking at, obviously, are classic offensive vertically categories. So the first one we talked about was, or we're going to talk about, is batting average. And you sent me a couple different guys. But one guy I wanted to talk about, which just wasn't on my radar at all, and I don't know if a lot of the you down with OBP faithful are in the same boat I am, but Stassi, I went and picked him up. Looking at what you wrote, you want to talk a little bit about him? I mean, why do you think he's so under the radar for everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I really like this guy, and a lot of people say the catcher landscape is awful. And I look at some of these guys, Max Stassi or Elias Diaz, rostered under 30%, and these guys should be picked up more. You know, they should be rostered more than 30%. So if we date it back to 2020 and 2021 combined, Stassi's OPS is over 900. His batting average is 289 on the year. So that's why I'm highlighting him as a batting average boost. The only downside I see is that Stassi splits time with Kurt Suzuki. But it looks like lately he's playing three games, getting one day off. And I think you can live with that from your catcher. So yeah. I am giving him the, you know, vote of confidence. And he has 10 home runs, too. So a little bit of power.
Yeah, I went and I looked at his at-bats. And they're not like, you know, he's not Real Muto. But he's not like he's only playing, you know, once every couple of days kind of thing. So, yeah, he's somebody that stood out for me. That's a category on a personal level that a lot of my teams need a boost on.
Same.
So I had Mike Zunino, and he's given me power. But, you know, I said, hey, I can't keep carrying this guy who's batting 200 when it's the catcher and the power is not that amazing anyway. So I went and picked up Stassi. So I'm excited about that, and I appreciate the direction that you gave there. And then the other guy I wanted to mention that you sent over and have written about for average is Lorenzo Cain. And I like him for average, and I also like the one thing I wanted to mention is that he's been on fire lately, but so is Milwaukee's offense. So it's kind of – that's one of the things I wanted to highlight too is that they've been putting up a lot of runs lately, and he's been a big part of that. So it's kind of fun to watch the teams that get hot and kind of ride that wave a little bit. But what do you think about Lorenzo Cain?
Yeah, I like Cain. I made him my player of the week rostered under 30% in my most recent waiver wire article. He's up to 25% rostered. Since he returned from the IL, which he was on for quite a while, he is hitting about 350, and he has chipped in 4 steals. He finally got his first home run. Since returning, he's never been a big home run guy. The most he ever had in a season was 16. But this is a career 287 hitter, so he can really help you on average. And I don't think he's cooked yet, even though he's about 35 years old.
Yeah, he's old as sin.
Yeah, he has really been hitting well. He has really been hitting well since returning from the IL. And like you said, I'm a big Brewers fan. You know, obviously they got the big three of Corbin Burns, Brandon Woodruff, and Freddy Peralta, who I love. But on offense, I've been writing about these guys all year. Not only Kane, but Willy Adames, Luis Urias, Eduardo Escobar, Avisal Garcia, to go along with a great catcher, Omar Narvaez. And the funny thing is, I didn't even mention Christian Yelich because he's been so bad.
He's been bad.
Compared to expectations.
To the field.
Yeah.
I'm a Yelich fan, so hopefully he figures it out. Excellent. Yeah, so we're kind of jumping around here. So we mentioned two batting average guys. Runs, we discussed Cesar Hernandez already a little bit, and that he doesn't just get you runs, but he's been selling out for a little bit of power, and we'll see if that continues with the old school manager. I think it'll probably, you know, he's not going to completely change what's been working for him, but maybe just a little bit, or he just keeps it as is. Was there another runs guy that really caught your eye that's available?
Some of the other guys that I put on the list were Colton Wong, another Brewer, and I didn't even mention him just now. He's the guy who bats leadoff for them. He's the benefactor of all those good hitters, and he's the guy who's going to get the most runs from it because he's batting leadoff. Other guys, J.P. Crawford has 59 runs on the season, Miguel Rojas, Brandon Nimmo, Rafael Ortega of the Cubs, and Josh Rojas of the Diamondbacks. So I like these guys to varying levels. I probably spotlight Brandon Nimmo. You know, if you're going to look at the rest of the season and say, which of these guys should really help me in runs and who is not rostered, you know, in a lot of leagues, currently rostered in 23% of Yahoo leagues, Brandon Nimmo is hitting leadoff for the Mets. Whatever you want to say about the Mets, they do have a lot of talented hitters. When they get Lindor back, that lineup gets a little bit better. Nimmo is a guy who is not like a batting average stud, but he is an on-base percentage stud, and you know we're down with OBP. So he's a guy who's getting a lot of runs for the rest of the year, and he hit a home run today. You know, he'll chip in some home runs, and he'll run around the base really fast like a little leaguer. Have you seen him when after he gets a walk and he runs full speed to first base?
Yeah. It's something else.
Yeah.
Nice. So we got batting average, we got runs. We'll jump into RBIs. We already covered probably the first guy I wanted to talk about with RBIs, which is Cron, so we don't have to revisit him. But one guy I wanted you to talk to me about, and you'd sold me on him on your recent article, so I'll just let you kind of stump for him, would be Brinson, if you want to tell us what's going on with him and how hot he's been lately.
Yeah, Brinson, when I wrote the article, which was Sunday, he was 3% rostered. Now I think he's up to 21% rostered. You know, when I go through my articles every week, just go through, you know, start with 50% and just scroll and see who's interesting. I got to Brinson and checked out and saw the last 30 days, he was crushing it. He got called back up on July 19th after being in AAA. And since then, he's got a 1.1 OPS. He has 5 home runs. He's increased his walk rate, and everything is just trending up for him. His sweet spot percentage is just, it looks like a roller coaster going up. For those that don't know, that just means that he's hitting the ball at the launch angle that is most likely to get a hit. His hard hit percentage is going up. It also looks like a 45 degree angle line. And his Z contact is going up, which is very encouraging. That means the contact that he's making at balls in the zone, in the strike zone. And he's not swinging more or less. He's just making more contact on those hittable balls in the strike zone. So when you put all these things together, he's making more contact, he's making sweeter contact, better launch angle, and he's making harder contact. It's not just those results that look good, it's the underlying numbers that look good. So that 30% strikeout rate, still iffy. there are reasons to be hesitant, but he's just been on fire. So roll with it.
Yeah, totally. I think his BABIP's a little high, but we've talked about that too. Neither of us, I think, are crazy about it, but in context, it's a little high. Nice. So I think the next category we were going to talk about was going to be home runs. And home runs for me, you know, it's usually not a category I'm too far behind in, so I haven't kept too much of an eye on the waiver wire form lately. One name I would want to bring up just to continue with the theme we had for the past couple categories, which is the Milwaukee Brewers. Rowdy Tellez has been pretty hot since he got traded, and that's a pretty hot offense. So where do you land on it as far as how much you believe in Tellez?
Yeah, Tellez was interesting to me for a while. We went on the Dugout Study Hall podcast, and Alexander Chase is one of the hosts over there with Matt Goodwin. And Alexander Chase is really big on something called hard hit per plate appearance instead of hard hit percentage, which is all the times you make contact, how many times it's over 95 miles per hour. Hard hit per plate appearance is per plate appearance, what percentage do you have contact that's over 95 miles per hour? And Tellez was on that list all year, but the problem was he just wasn't getting many at-bats for the Blue Jays. So when he got traded to the Brewers, it's like, okay, nice. This is interesting. And then he got that first base job. He didn't have much competition. It was like Travis Shaw's hurt. Vogelbach is hurt. They were putting Jace Peterson out there, who's not like a power hitter. So they gave that job to Tellez, and he's really been doing well lately. He has 5 home runs in not that many games since that trade, and he's batting .349 over the last month. So finally got that opportunity. He's a guy whose hard hit numbers were interesting. And so definitely interested. 15% rostered can help you in those home runs and RBIs for sure.
Nice. And was there another home run name you wanted to kind of stump for before we jump over to stolen bases?
One guy who I've just picked up in some of my leagues is Evan Longoria. His 61.3 hard hit percentage is tops in the league for anybody who has at least 100 batted balls. And he's been on the IL for 2 months, but he should make his return this weekend. He's not back yet, but he should make his return. It's kind of a crowded, like the Giants are so stacked suddenly. They have Chris Bryant, obviously, and just all of their hitters are hitting. Like guys that the casual fan will have never heard of, like Lamont Wade is just, you know, raking. But I feel like they'll get Longo in the lineup at third base. Bryant can play a lot of left field. So I think they'll get Longo and Bryant into the lineup together a lot. So I'm really stumping for him, and he's only 19% rostered.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff where, like, I don't know if he got hurt early, played, and then got hurt, and now he's coming back, or if it was just the one time. But when he's been getting at bats, he's looked like a younger version. You know, he seems to be playing better than his age to begin with.
Like Joey Votto.
Yeah, exactly. So he was somebody that was interesting, and you know, he's not exactly like a premier name anymore. So he's not one of those guys that's definitely going to get carried as an injured player, or if not carried by somebody on their IL spot, at least on everybody's radar to go scoop up when they come out. So he could come out and he could definitely contribute for you if he plays like he's been playing when healthy. So I like that a lot. Jumping into stolen bases, you sent me a few names. Straw, Badu, and Robles, to name a few. One thing I'd want to mention, and I think you mentioned it too, if you're looking at Badu, is that he's out for probably a week with a concussion. Hopefully just a week. You never know with concussions. One thing I wanted to mention before we jump into those names, I was looking at one of those chats on Fangraphs. I think it was Paul Sporer. And a couple names, some of the contributees to the chat, which is anybody who wants to, tossed out were a couple younger players that have some speed. So I wanted to see if they've been on your radar at all or what your thoughts are. And the first one would be Yonny Hernandez. So has he been on your radar at all or not really?
He actually wasn't on my radar very much, but I was just looking at Roster Resource through Fangraphs, which is a great resource to to see where people are batting. And I saw that he's been batting second for the Rangers. And I was like, okay, this is interesting. So, yeah, he had 21 steals in AAA, huh? Before he came up.
I think he's got like 2 steals and 20 at bats or something like that, too, since he came up, too.
Nice.
So I always like those young guys. So that's one name I can't take credit for, but I saw it. And I don't know much about him, but he's got, like you said, he's been put in a position where he's going to get at bats and he's fast. So, you know, if you're looking for cheap steals, that you might have a, I also feel like those young guys are just going to run more in general than some of the older names. So you might just, and we don't, he's kind of an unknown. So you take a risk, obviously, but the nice thing about unknowns is they might surprise you in a good way and just, you know, all of a sudden just start stealing bags like crazy. And then the other young guy I wanted to mention was Brian Miller. I think he might have got brought up by Miami. Had he been on your radar at all or not really?
Yeah, not really. I do know that the Marlins have been rolling with Brian Miller and Brian De La Cruz. So they had the dual Bryans coming up. Yeah, I don't know much about him. He did have 23 steals in AAA as well. And he's also, you know, a reasonably respected prospect, 55 speed.
Yeah, I think of the two, not knowing much about him, I'd probably lean towards the Yonny Hernandez. But yeah, and then the other guy you mentioned who he hasn't been available in my league, so he hasn't really been on my radar because, you know, well, I'm looking at the waiver wire for steals. But Straw has 19 stolen bases, which I wouldn't have guessed would be, you know, somebody who is only owned in about 50% of the leagues would have. So you want to stump for him a little bit?
Yeah. Straw's the type of guy. Miles Straw got traded to the Indians from the Astros. Type of guy I would never have on my roster to start a year because I just don't like one category guys. And he was batting eighth or ninth for the Astros, but stealing bases. But now he comes to Cleveland and he is batting leadoff. He's stealing bases. And it also happens to be that time of the year where you need a boost in a certain category. So you sort of sacrifice other categories a little bit. So when you combine the fact that now he's at the top of the lineup and is going to help you in runs a little bit more, I'm way more interested in Straw. He has the added benefit that he's shortstop and outfield eligible. And currently he's 50% rostered. So yeah, this is the time of year where I would go and get a guy like him.
He doesn't kill you for average either. Yeah, you know, I was thinking, and we'll probably need to wrap it up because me and Mick have a fantasy English Premier League draft. But
hell yeah.
Yeah, right. It's going to be fun. The one thing I was thinking for like an article that might be kind of cool is when you get to this point and you are looking for category contributors, you know, I don't know if you've looked into it at all or if it's a common topic or what have you, but I think it would be kind of fun to just look at like if you could play around almost with like a calculator in a sense where you say, you know, hey, when is it a good time to potentially just you look at it and you see, hey, I'm 30 steals behind the next guy. I'm 30 steals ahead of the one behind me just to make up random numbers. Maybe I don't really need to do much with steals anymore. You know, it'd be kind of fun to have like a general idea when maybe you can punt a category or when maybe it doesn't really make sense to go chasing a category because, hey, that 50 RBIs is actually kind of a lot if you look at it. So obviously it's dependent on other trades that have happened before the deadline and stuff like that. But it might be kind of a fun thing to play around with as well when you're looking at the category contributors. Because there's a couple categories I'm thinking, hey, do I really even need to be doing the saves as one? You know, I'm not that it's a crazy amount, but I think I'm up like 16 saves on the next person. And it's like, well, how many, you know, I honestly don't know. But you know, the question would be how many saves are really reasonably expected. I guess you can go back and look to see what the team averages per week or something. But there might be just a general rule of thumb or it might just be kind of a fun sandbox to play around in and then research a little bit. But I'm giving you homework chores. But that's really all I have. Mick, did you have anything else you wanted to talk about tonight?
No, I think that's going to wrap it up. It's been great to be back after a long wait. We appreciate all you Down with OBP Faithful for listening. And we will talk to you next time.